discussions. Our first panel will take us through until our next little break. We're full of break-in food today, so please do eat up and talk a lot amongst yourselves, but not right now. We have the distinguished pleasure of having three representatives of our community who have had contact with both our mental health and our justice systems, who are leaders in their community, mentors, and it is very much an honor to have them here today. It would be remiss of us to discuss public safety and mental health without having a consumer voice. We all work in the policy level, and it is important for us to remember the experiences of those we seek to support and help and guide towards recovery. So I'd like to introduce to you, and maybe you could flip a coin to decide who gets the pleasure of going first. Well, first we have Wendy, who I will let her introduce herself, and go ahead and pick a mic that you want to have close to you. Wendy Ball Engie, and then Ann Casper, who some of you might know from her advocacy work through the county, and David Fitzgerald, who is an employee of Central City Concern. So let's give him a round of applause.
Well, thank you. Can you all hear me? Can you all hear me okay? My name is Wendy Ball Engie. I am a consumer of mental health, wellness, and recovery. Through my life, I have faced a lot of challenges and a lot of physical and mental struggles that I have had in my life. During my early years, I was the doctors and my folks thought that I was suffering from a brain tumor at 18 months old. I had angels all around me at that time, and that wasn't the concern at the time, so that was off of my list. So I have scoliosis, which is curvature of the spine, which I had rods put in my back, and so today I have a huge recovery, strengths, and wellness going on in my life today. I am a consumer of the mental health, I am a consumer of mental health, wellness, and recovery. I'm a peer support specialist. I recently just took my Multnomah County exam and became a peer support specialist in the county of Multnomah. I am trying to be a part of the peer support specialist as far as getting educated for the state of Oregon, completely for the state of Oregon. Through my years of struggles, I have seen many therapists. I have seen many counselors that have been a huge help to me in my life. I have also been I have found my inner strengths by knowing that I am a survivor of drug addiction, alcoholism, and also mental health illness. I have, and like I said, I have been educating myself on mental health wellness. I have been doing a lot of, during my time of incarceration, I had spent 2000 to 2002, got out on program that cuts your time in half. And if you're being a complete, getting back into the community and seeing your probation officer and doing what is right in your life, you will get that time cut in half. So as I had been in prison, I had found out that many classes were a huge asset to me in my life. I learned how to take responsibility for myself. I knew not to blame others for my mistakes. and I knew that I had to gain my own empowerment back to be a leadership in the community, to be a leader in the community. So I had been, I took several different classes. I also, when I had gotten, when I was in prison, excuse me, I had applied for what is, well, y'all are pretty aware of the DSHS programs locally here in the state of Oregon and also in the state of Washington. I have, so I applied while I was in prison, and that was a huge asset to me because upon my reentering into society again, I was, as a matter of fact, the DSHS department had given me a call and said, why haven't you come in yet and received your benefits? It was like, oh my gosh, you know, these people really do care. They are concerned about my well-being. So I had applied, like I said, while I was in prison. And so that was just like incredible to me to be able to get out, have my Medicaid already set up to, and they even gave me food stamps. I said, woohoo! Because I wasn't quite sure where my next meal was going to come from. So as I turn and look back on my life, in my incarcerations, I have developed responsibility, dedication to my work and to my volunteer positions that I do. I volunteer at a agency called North Star, who is here locally in the Portland area on 56 and Gleason Street. They have 250 memberships and 100 active memberships. I am today also involved in a church, which is called True Life Fellowship. And so it has just been a huge inspiration to me to be able to come in and speak with all of you about my mental health condition and where I'm going in my life. And not looking back on my past life, but knowing that I'm an overcomer and I'm an achiever. And I have set my goals, and I have reached several of them. I have a long ways to go, though. But you know what? By my angels above that have protected me and helped me, by the grace of my angels, I should not be here today, even speaking to you all. I was addicted to heroin, cocaine at the age of 12. Through my back surgery, I was on morphine, when I had my back surgery at 10 years old. So, and that's kind of the time in life where children are just trying to start to grow, and by that struggle of opiates in my life, it led to me going into my junior high days and not feeling really that I fit in. So at that time, and due to my scoliosis, I was in back braces from the time I was 5 years old and on. And so I couldn't really participate in any kind of school, like physical education, due to my back braces and my surgery. So when I was growing up, my chemical imbalance got really thrown off by being on those pain medications for several years. And those back braces too, which made people look at me different. And I felt like I was alone. I felt like there was nobody that could really relate to me. So I had gone into my junior high years, and at that time, started hanging out with the wrong crowd, and that's where my marijuana started in my life. The marijuana was an open gateway drug to my drug addiction. I kept smoking more, and at that time, I wasn't getting filled up, and I knew that there was something that I just needed to have peace and happiness. So I was doing cocaine at the age of 12. And then came the meth and whatever there was. I was getting high 5 to 6 times a day on whatever came my way. And today, I want to talk about today and where I'm going in my life today. Today, I am in recovery. I have, I'm also a certified peer support specialist in the state of Washington, and also in, like I had spoke earlier, in the Multnomah County area. Peer support is about bringing, inspiring hope, talking a little bit and making a connection with the peer, and allowing them to feel comfortable with opening up and sharing their story so that I can help them to plan a recovery process, I'm going to say, for them by allowing them to find their inner strengths, allowing them to know that there is hope. And that is truly where I want to, if I can just reach out to one person, either in the jails or in different institutions or in different mental health agencies, I will know that I have come, that I have reached one of my goals in my life. If I can just reach out to that one person, just that one person, and then I can take it farther, and then I can reach out to another one and another one. And that's where the hope and the inspiration comes. And by me gaining my empowerment back, I have truly come to know that recovery is possible. It's not about looking back and staying stuck in my past. It's about moving forward and gaining the strength and the hope and the peace in my life to be able to do that. And so, anyways, I would just like to thank you all for listening to me. And being a part of this What Works conference is a wonderful inspiration to me. I am also, I've been working with North Star for some employment support. I am also working with the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation, and that is huge for me in my life. I have been putting applications out, and this is a wonderful place to network, and I thank you all for allowing me to be a part of this conference, to be able to network and hopefully get a job. Thank you.
Okay. Can you hear me? Yeah, okay. My name is David Fitzgerald. I work for Central City Concern. I'm supervisor of the Recovery Mentor Program, which is one of the many programs under the umbrella. Thanks for having me here. Am I nervous? No. Am I excited? Yes. I have to maintain some focus here because I think I got a lot to say and that might be scary, but I'm also 62 years old, and I was born in this city in 1951 to a heroin addict father and an alcoholic mother. And so I have that experience. I've also been clean and sober for over 16 years. I have been a provider for 13 years, so I've seen a lot. And what I know is that today I appreciate living in Multnomah County. I appreciate actually living in the city of Portland. I deal with a lot of people, and what I see is that there isn't anywhere else like Portland in regards to services. People come from other cities, people come from other states to get help in Portland. Sometimes we have to be careful because we don't want to use all of Multnomah County's money. Providing services for people from other states. but we try not to discriminate. You know, yeah, I've got a story, and that's one story, and then I have another story, and I need to figure out if I can combine the two and make sense. But what I know is, yeah, I use drugs and I use alcohol, and I was criminally minded, and I spent over 20 years in prison. And that's that story. But the more important story is today. I no longer use. I was granted opportunity. You know, I got clean in January 19th, 1997. And there weren't a lot of people like me that were getting clean, being the criminal drug addict. And I got out of prison after doing 13 years, and I knew I didn't want to go back, but I didn't really know what that all looked like, you know. And I got out, and they gave me a little room in a hotel downtown, and they gave me a PO, and they told me, go get a job and you'll be okay. And that's just not the truth, because I was scared to death. And then began my struggle. And it took me some years to recover, because back then there wasn't the help that there is now. We're making progress, but there's still more progress that can be made. We're doing a good job, but we can do better. And we're getting better. What I know is that I had a few attempts without success. I had a PO that saw something in me that nobody else had saw, and she mandated me to treatment. And treatment was treatment, and it was important. And with that treatment came housing, and that was important. Alcohol and drug-free housing was crucial to me. You know, I valued that I had a place to live that was mine. And the thought of losing that housing opportunity was frightening, and it assisted me in times where I might have gotten weak and thought about getting high, and I didn't get high because I didn't want to lose my housing, and that's just the truth of it. In treatment made me go to Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm not here to talk about Narcotics Anonymous, but I believe in a 12-step discipline. It works. Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine's Anonymous is a vital part of the recovery process, as well as treatment and housing. So I'm in treatment and I'm in housing, and I'm starting to go to Narcotics Anonymous meetings, and having been the drug addict criminal that I was and being locked away and locked out of society by choice, is I didn't know how to make the connections. And having bought into a discipline, which was a criminal discipline, and that code, and I was so entrenched in it that I couldn't find my way out. And people would try to help me, and I couldn't hear what they were saying. I just couldn't hear them. And then I went to a meeting one day, and I ran into a guy that I'd known all my life, and I had respect for him. He had been what was classified a good convict, and I had respect for him. And I saw him in a meeting, and he had a girlfriend and a car and a job, and his girlfriend had all of her teeth, and it was exciting to me. I wanted some of what he had. And what happened in that process is there was a connection made. There was a human connection. And what that was is permission. And he had given me permission to investigate the possibility that I could change, because I saw a change in him. And what I found out in that is it wasn't the message, but it was the messenger. And that's important. You know, the Recovery Mentor Program is a program that came out of a heroin overdose epidemic in 1999, and the city was concerned and they weren't sure what to do. And they went to Richard Harris, who was the founder of Central City Concern, and David Eisen, who ran the recovery program, and asked, do you have an idea? And they said, not really, but there's an organization of people called RAP, the Recovery Associations Project, and it's a group of recovering addicts who have got clean and stayed clean, and they meet and they come together because they found that they have a voice and they have concerns. See, people get clean, and feel a responsibility, and I'm grateful that I felt that responsibility to this city and to the people. RAP had that same agenda. And they said, why don't we go to a RAP meeting and ask them the question, what can be done, and see what happens? And they did, and there was an addict in the room. See, there used to be a few of us that had got clean, and we used to sit around and talk all the time. And we were in Central City Concerned Housing in the Hatfield. And we used to wonder, how come more people aren't getting clean? How come our people aren't getting clean? And we'd talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. We come up with all these different plans. And we used to think, well, that sounds good, but nobody's ever going to listen to us, and they're never going to let us do it. But one of them guys, excuse me, it's probably my wife making sure I'm not cursing. But,
love it.
And there was a gentleman in that room, and he stood up and he says, I have an idea. And his name was Randy. And he said he'd gone to Hooper numerous times, and he really wanted to get clean, and he was clean at the time that this meeting went on. But and he talked about his struggles to get clean. And he said, I wanted to get clean, so I went to Hooper, and they detoxed me, and that was an eight-day detox. He said, so I'm done with the detox. They tell me that morning it's time to go. I'm medically able to leave. They walk me downstairs at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's November. It's kind of like it's out there today. It was raining. It was freezing cold. They told him, we've done all we can do for you, and they handed him a piece of paper. And they told him, take this piece of paper and go across the bridge and go see your PO. Go sign up for food stamps. Go get a food box. Go see if you can get some treatment. Go see if you can find some housing with that treatment. And go get a TB test. And he took that piece of paper and he looked at him and he thought, wow. Mm-hmm. And all these guys had a backpack with some burglar tools and some dirty clothes. So he pulled that piece of paper up and he put it in his pocket and he really wanted to get clean. But before he could walk across that bridge, all of that became so much, more than he could do, that he just bought some heroin from the next Mexican he saw and he got loaded and he didn't have to worry about it anymore. And he talked about that experience, and he said, there is something that can be done. Here in Portland, Oregon, there are a group of recovering people that are being overlooked, and we are the help. We are the help, and we want to help. And we've been excluded for so many years because of our criminal history. But now, because of the progress in this city, and because of the Recovery Mentor Program, we are the original Recovery Mentor Program. And he said, let us go in and get our people. Let us save our people. Let us help our people. Let us handpick our people, because we know. They know us, and we know them. We know when they're lying, and we know when they're sincere. And let us pick and choose. And they said, okay, here's $100,000. Let's try it. And that was in 1999, and here we are 13 years later still working with $100,000, but we're helping people get clean. And they said, go ahead, and they hired three mentors who were recovering addicts. And what the mentors did, it went into Hooper and interviewed clients that said they wanted to get clean. And they worked on relationship with that client. If they didn't know that client, they knew of that client. And if the client didn't know them, they knew of them. They worked on building a relationship. They picked them up at Hooper. We said, okay, we'll take you. And we met them at the door the day they got out, and we put them in our car. And they gave us housing, and they gave us treatment slots. And we took them people, and we took them to housing and got them a room. We took them to see their parole officer. We took them to sign up for food stamps. We took them to get a food box, and we took them to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and we were the first person they saw the next morning. And what we did is we filled in the gap, and we were the piece that was missing. We were the piece that was missing, and that's what happened to me. And people that come to the Recovery Mentor Program, Ed Blackburn always tells me to be careful about numbers, so I will be careful about that. But I'll tell you that over 50% of the people that come to our program leave our program successfully. There are more people that leave successfully than people that relapse, over 50%. And then people leave and they're employed, and they're housed, and they're paying taxes, and they're self-sufficient. And so if I have a message, that's my message. Is this isn't the 40s or the 50s or the 60s anymore. It's 2013. And they said, once an addict, always an addict. Well, I need to let you know that that's not true. We do get clean. And we have value. And it matters to us. It matters to me more than anything. And I believe that I was born to do this, and I believe that I do the work to carry this message. Peer-delivered services. Not just anybody can be a mentor, but there are those of us that can. Thank you.
So how do I follow these two?
Wow.
This is the What Works conference, so I'm going to tell you what worked for me not to go in the criminal justice system. So some of the system does work. I just like to say in the past 3 years, I've been in the psychiatric hospital 5 times. I know I don't look like it, but it happens to me. So I go into psychosis, and what does psychosis mean to me? It means I feel a deep fear down to my soul, really, really scared. So I stop talking because I think the words are going to cause people to die and cause me to die. I become catatonic. I get signals. I see like red and green. So for example, you're wearing the red shirt, I would not talk to you. If it's a green shirt, oh, Judy, there we go, I would talk to you. And if I saw red or green on the street, I would just stop and go and stop and go. If I heard the train whistle, then that would mean I had to turn around. So it's pretty strange behavior out there. I stop eating, and I also feel like I should be homeless and I should be a prostitute. So I have gotten in some very dangerous, strange situations. I do take medication. I've taken over 23 medications in the past 27 years. They keep trying new things. I'm on a pretty good regimen right now. I did want to give you some of the side effects that over the 27 years. Acne, weight gain, like 30 pounds in 1 month, even on the same diet, pre-diabetic, lactation, dry mouth, which causes teeth problems, problems with my kidney and liver, actually making my nails stronger, which is cool, and my hair curly, and now you see I don't take that medication anymore. So hypersexual, no sex drive, hands shaking, fingers shaking. I had a hard time as a teacher, and sometimes the words on the paper would move. So that was so hard to teach literacy if the words on the paper are moving from that. Rashes, eyes sensitive to light, and skin sensitive to sunlight. So you can see why maybe people don't like to take medication. I actually become psychotic with or without medication. So there have been times when I've gotten off the medication and that caused psychosis, but there have been times when I've been following orders and doing exactly as I'm told to do, and I still get psychotic. I don't know why that is. Every time even it happened last year, I keep saying, this is not gonna happen again. This is it, I'm tired of this. Sometimes it does. It's just something I have to live with. So the first time I was forced into the hospital, I never go actually willingly. I have to be physically forced in. I'm learning how to look at the triggers and stop that before that happens. That just happened this year. I can look at the triggers. But I've been forced in, put in isolation rooms, given shots in the hip, things like that. I want to talk about what's worked for me. Number one, the kindness of strangers. So I have been in really strange situations, again, because I think I need to be a prostitute. I've tried to steal a car. I've tried to steal a bicycle. I've chased down people in cars on the street trying to look for help. And the kindness of strangers have gotten me out of that situation. They haven't contacted the police. I've been so lucky, and they've got me out and got me into help. Another thing that's helped me is the police. So I was actually a teacher in Japan, and I was doing fine for the whole year there, taking my lithium, doing what they said. And I loved Japan, so I wanted to stay later. And I stayed beyond that year of teaching. So I stayed there, and the weather got so hot and humid that my lithium got toxic in my body, which caused psychosis. And I got very scared again. I ended up traveling around different islands. And at one point, I was in train station, and I was looking at people like you, they're all Japanese, they look like my friends in America. So I started grabbing them and talking to them, and because I was really lonely. The police got me, they were very gentle to me, took me into a hotel room, and then I was there for the night. In this hotel room, I thought I would just kill myself. It wasn't out of depression, it was out of just pure confusion. And so I happened not to do that. The next day, I went outside. I thought a flea was talking to me. So in the hotel, I took a fire extinguisher, and I blew it all around the hotel. So if that had happened in the United States, I'm sure you've been charged and have problems. In Japan, they didn't charge me. They got me in the mental health system. Another thing that helps me is actually the, oh, I was going to say about the Portland police. I didn't get to those yet. I had been on and off of insurance for years, and at one point I kept going in and out of the hospital so much. I was on the Multnomah Treatment Fund, which is for indigent people without money, and they get you on insurance. And that was helping out, but I was doing better, but they cut me off. When you do better, they cut you off so other people can get help. Got cut off. I didn't know where I was going to get money for my medications, so I decided to go off the medications, which was not a good idea. I got psychotic for 6 months at that time. I probably spoke to people 12, 14 times. I wouldn't speak to people at all. Project Respond came to my house a few times. Finally, after about 6 months, they snuck their way in. They said that, and they came with two policemen. The policeman and policewoman put me in handcuffs and took me to the hospital. And I don't think they needed handcuffs, but it worked for me. And I just want to say that's probably the best thing that happened to me. I don't know where I'd be today without that help getting to the hospital. I was not going to go willingly. Another thing that works in Multnomah County for me is the hold process and the commitment process. I've been on 6 holds. The Multnomah County pre-commitment people know me, so they've been very helpful. What we've decided, in my case, I can come out of psychosis within a couple of weeks with medication. So we've decided that I will sign a 14-day diversion paper. So even if I'm most psychotic, because that's already an agreement, I sign that paper. It means I stay for about 14 days. I don't go through the commitment hearing, and I can leave the hospital if I'm better after that. I've been committed, and I think, as you know, to go into the commitment court, they take you from the hospital in the sheriff's car, being handcuffed again with shackles, and that's not easy. And what I didn't like after being committed is that they charged me for it. So here I am losing my civil rights and being charged for it, having to work at the hospital to get that money going. One thing that works for me is the public mental health system. I'm in a wonderful, wonderful agency called the Quest Center for Integrative Care. I've had the same nurse practitioner and same therapist for 5 years. This is very, very, very unusual in a public agency. My friends usually have to switch therapists every 6 months or so. In fact, I was doing that too at another large agency, and so I just got sick of telling my story. I just write it down and give them the story. At this Quest Center, they have David Eisen, which he mentioned. I can't believe that. He does acupuncture. So he said, well, let's try acupuncture. It actually gets me out of psychosis 50 to 80% faster than just medications. What also has worked for me, my supportive parents. They've helped me financially so I could keep my housing. They, for example, also they're very positive. I cut off all my hair because I had to, thought I had to make a sacrifice, and they said, well, it's straight, you did a good job. So they are getting older. They are the only ones in my family who support me. My brother, my aunts, uncles, cousins won't talk about mental health. They're getting older. My father's in a wheelchair. They can't physically force me into a hospital anymore. So they have Project Respond and Speed Dial, and we'll use them. Also what's helped me is other peers. And I do actually a TV show on mental health on Portland Cable Access. I've been able to interview Judge Baldwin and Judge Connie Isgrove, I think you know them, and also other people with mental health issues. I also do belly dancing, really bad. Through this, I've lost friends, I've lost a lot, I've lost 3 jobs. I've been evicted twice because of my mental health issues. I have felt the guilt of really hurting people and the shame. I don't know if you can understand. I know I do these things when I'm not in my right mind. I still feel a lot of shame. And I've been working on self-forgiveness. So let me just read the introduction to who I am. I'd like to start off with my activities. I'm not a diagnosis. I speak French, German, and Japanese. I'm not cursing, so helps you do that. I have a master's in applied linguistics. I taught English as a second language in Germany and Japan, as well as Portland State and Portland Community College. I got scholarships from the government of Germany, Japan, and Switzerland to go and work there. I've helped more than 400 refugees resettle with food, housing, and clothing and transportation in Portland. I'm an expert on Iraqi Kurds. I know that sounds really strange, but they were a big group that came to Portland in the 90s. And I have visited Kurdish leaders in Turkey, Syria, and Lebanon. So I've been more than 15 countries. I love traveling. And many of you know me as a peer with bipolar in your committees. I really wanted to be a diplomat, so I guess I've ended up to be a diplomat, just not overseas, just with you guys. And I'd like to say two programs that really work is the Crisis Assessment Treatment Center. That's where I work as a peer specialist once a week, and that's through Multnomah County. It's really wonderful. People actually want to come back. It's an inpatient unit. Who wants to go back to an inpatient unit? Their peers actually run a lot of the things there. We run the groups, we run the help, and it makes a difference that the peers are doing this. ESA, the Early Assessment and Support Alliance that is spoken about before here, about the 15 to 25-year-olds getting their help for the first psychosis, really will keep people out of the system, and I hope we can support that more. And I don't know how to explain this, but the LIPSIG committee I've been on for years has really helped me as a person. I've been in and out with no jobs. I've explained this to them. They've been very supportive. In and out without insurance. Some days, like for months, I was so depressed, all I would do is stay in bed all day long. But I had those committee meetings to go to once a month. So that was so important, that to feel like I was doing something and people cared in those committees. And I know in my biography it said I know where the best desserts are in the Portland hospital system. So it's Good Samaritan. That's it.